The Passing by T. Mitchell Adams. The only sounds in the residence of Bud McCurdy tonight, like most, was the hum of the refrigerator and the continual ticking of the grandfather clock that stood in the corner of the room behind his chair where he was sitting. The living room was decorated with photos, many of which were of his late wife Eve, who had died 11 years ago in December. A photo of their children, Bud Jr. and Lily, hung on the wall by their mother's photo. A plane crash had killed them both. Eve had preceded them in death, and Bud had always been thankful she didn't have to know the pain of losing them. Snapshots of friends littered the wall as well, all in black and white. The only color lived in his recollections of them. Bud had outlived them all and knew he alone carried the memories and stories of their lives. He didn't ask or know why he was the last. It was just that way. The lamp that burned on the small wooden table night after night poorly illuminated the room and didn't penetrate the darkness of the kitchen or the hall. It had been over a year since anyone visited him, other than the mailman and paper boy. Neighborhood children shied away from his porch, even on what his mother had called the Devil's Night. It was, to him, just Halloween. For months after, he added a candy bar to his dinner. Each year, he'd purchased less candy. This year, he was down to one bag of Snickers. Next year, he'd forgo the so-called holiday altogether. He shifted his weight in the old recliner as worn-out springs groaned in whiny protest. The thought of getting rid of the chair never crossed his mind. Its dark yellow and orange fabric with brown stripes down the back and sides, the chair had been a gift from Eve on their 40th anniversary. Young people in the disposable age we live in now would never comprehend what it means to hang on to something in this manner, he thought. Thick framed black glasses rested on the bridge of his nose. Smudges and dirt obstructed his view, yet he took no notice. Bud looked over his shoulder at the old clock that had been another gift from Eve. It was almost time for the 10 o'clock news. Where had the evening gone? He asked himself. What does it matter? He replied. His hands rested on the old armrest. Filling the familiar fabric with wrinkled hands was comforting. Tears began to form as memories flooded his brain. Everything he looked at in the home was a testament to his late wife, children, and friends. Pushing the tears away, he reached for the pen and paper that rested by the lamp. He scribbled out a shopping list and would make his jaunt to the store as he did every Friday. Maybe he would see Stephen. The young man who helped him find more items in the grocery store than Bud cared to admit. It wasn't that he really needed help. He just liked having someone to talk to. If Stephen was not there, maybe he'd find Debbie, his favorite cashier. She was 17, had a baby on the way, and lived at home with her mother. The father of the baby had ran off with one of Debbie's girlfriends. Bud's heart went out to the girl. She seemed so fragile and virtually on the edge of tears every time he saw her. Debbie was willing enough to talk about her problems. He presumed she was like that with everyone who would listen. But it didn't matter to him. Bud became more aware of the ticking of the clock, his eyes impossibly heavy as an invisible force beckoned them to close and to sleep. Rest was needed, the clock told him so. In his dreams, Eve came to him first. She wore an evening gown of white, almost angelic in appearance. She spoke in soft tones, things whispered but regrettably forgotten. After all the years, she remained stunning and her voice soothing. Bud Jr. and Lily appeared next. At first, they were infants. Bud remembered the smell of their hair, of childhood laughter, sounds of playing, and running of feet. Moments of sickness and colds, and then teenage years, and of first-time heartbreaks. And there was the feeling of helplessness, because sometimes lending an ear is all you can do. They vanished in a haze. Then he saw Stephen and Debbie. They were both at work. Stephen was stocking shelves and helping customers. A smile formed around the corners of Bud's mouth. Debbie was at the register. He heard the audible beeps as each item was scanned. She told the customer of the birth of her child, and she even showed photos of the newborn. Bud knew everything was going to work out for them. Funny he should dream of them. They were strangers, really, but in truth, the only friends he had. Next, Bud saw his little house. It was deserted, a lifetime of purchases removed from it. Then he saw a moving truck pull into the driveway. Bud was an unseen spectator from above. A newly married couple was moving in. Bud figured the pitter-patter of little feet would soon follow and fill the house with new joy. Without comprehending why, Bud saw the grandfather clock. Its second hand began to slow, as did the pendulum. He watched as both stopped. Then the pendulum started its swing. But the natural direction was forgotten as the second hand started moving backwards. With swiftness and trepidation, Bud woke up, looking around uncertain. He felt like something had happened, but what? With unsteady hands, he pushed himself up from the chair. His vision was blurry as he crossed the room and went to the window. Looking out, he saw the dark night. Porch lights were lit, but nothing seemed out of place. A dog barked in the distance. Bud walked away from the window and went into the hall. In the bathroom, his aged hand reached for the light switch, the sudden brightness blinding him momentarily. Bud looked at his reflection in the mirror, his eyesight still blurry. He reached up and took the glasses off to clean them. As he did so, the blurriness went away. He didn't seem to need them. He couldn't comprehend how this could be. At the sink, he turned on cold water, the knob slow to turn at first. His hands felt vibrant. The pain in them lessened. He splashed water in his face, his breath momentarily taken away. Bud felt more alert. He turned out the bathroom light and stepped into the hall. A sudden chill settled over him. From the corner of his eye, he saw the pitch blackness of the master bedroom. Eve died in that room. In somber resignation of that time during his life, he'd relinquished his need to use the bedroom. Back in his chair, he picked up the morning paper, yesterday's happenings. He put on his spectacles out of need, yet news articles became harder to read. His hand trembled momentarily. The paper rattled. He removed the reading glasses and the text was clear. "This can't be," he said to himself. If he'd not felt some of the familiar pains of his age, then he might have pinched himself to be sure he was awake. For the moment, his heart skipped a beat. He thought maybe this would have been the night his loneliness would end, death would take him, and his years of waiting would be finished. He forced himself up from the chair again, yet with less effort than before. In the kitchen, he poured milk in a pan. His hands were steady as he held the match to the stove and gas ignited into blue flame. He placed the pan of milk on the burner until it became warm. When finished, he turned off the stove, switched out the light in the kitchen, and carried the warm milk back to the living room. Sitting back down in the old chair, Bud glanced at his surroundings. He felt isolated and forgotten. Some might argue he'd made it that way. He fought down the urge to go for an after-midnight walk. A man his age had no business wandering the streets at this time of night. That loneliness washed over him like an old hateful friend who'd come to visit. While his eyesight had miraculously gotten better, there was no cure found for his inaccessible state of mind. His eyes felt heavy again. The milk was soothing, and he drifted into slumber deeper than before. The clock ticked with the passing of time. The world outside of Bud McCurdy's residence measured time differently, and as he slept, thoughts momentarily fragmented like shards of glass. The younger generation was locked in a rat race to prove who lives in a larger home, drives a bigger SUV, and owns the newest gadgets. Even wives are a disposable commodity in this age, and they could be traded in for a younger model as easy as it was for him to buy a new hat. The world lacks commitment, and for Bud McCurdy, it was no place to be anymore. His breathing and heartbeat remained steady, almost in a comatose status. This sleep of stillness held his body motionless. If a person could have seen past the drapes to see him in this element, they might have mistaken him for a dead man. At dawn, Bud opened his eyes and looked around. He felt refreshed and better than he had in years. He stood up without any pain, his glasses forgotten on the end table. In the kitchen, he fried 5 eggs. 2 frozen waffles were smothered in butter and bathed in pecan syrup. He liked bacon or sausage, but was out of both. He was famished. This was not a toast or a coffee day. Today, he'd splurge. But being on a fixed income didn't help. Anymore, it seemed like the animals were charging. After cooking and cleaning the kitchen, he'd put out seed for Eve's birds, outside birds. Bud liked to imagine they were the descendants of the birds his wife had once enjoyed feeding. Looking under the kitchen sink, he took out an empty old faded metal coffee can and walked to the kitchen's back door. Bud opened it and felt the cool fall wind. Hanging just to the left of the window was an empty bird feeder. On the ground rested a white 5-gallon bucket. It was half full of seed. He dipped the coffee can in, filling it halfway. Then he transferred the contents of the feeder. When he had finished, he went back inside and locked the door. He leaned over and put the old coffee can back under the sink. Then, standing upright, he noticed there was no back pain. On the top of the refrigerator was another newer coffee can. This one held Nature's Wake Me Up. In moments, he had the coffee brewing. He looked out the window as the birds flocked to the feeder. The coffee's aroma soon filled the kitchen and followed him to the bathroom, where his teeth waited. In the bathroom, Bud switched on the light. A gasp escaped his mouth, as birds and coffee were forgotten. Disbelief and trepidation mixed in the pit of Bud's stomach. "This can't be," he said. His hair was black as night, the grayness gone. The carvings of decades of his life were gone as well. Wrinkles had vanished as if embedded in sand and washed away by the tide. His jaw dropped open, revealing a mouthful of pearly whites. From a glass jar, Bud's false teeth seemed to be smiling back at him disapprovingly. With a trembling hand, he reached for the jar and picked it up. The teeth danced merrily around in the watery solution. He quickly opened the medicine cabinet, put the jar away, and firmly closed the mirror door. What the hell is going on? Bud didn't have any teeth when he'd eaten breakfast. They came in while walking from the kitchen to the bathroom. Having them was impossible, but he did. He unbuttoned his shirt, examining his chest. The scar from his open-heart surgery had vanished. He quickly wondered as to the whereabouts of his pacemaker. Did he still have it? He buttoned his shirt as he walked out of the bathroom. At the front door, he unlocked the deadbolt, unlatched the chain, opened the door, and stepped out onto the porch. The fall temperature made him feel like his pants were too thin. 2 newspapers rested on the steps. He picked up both editions of the Times-Picayune. His mind raced. Why 2 papers? It was impossible to think he had slept for 2 days, but he must have. For a moment, he wished the second paper was dated 1956 to match his appearance. If that were the case, then Eve would still be alive, and about this time of day, she'd be in the kitchen fixing breakfast. He even looked through the open doorway to the kitchen, but she was not there. The kitchen was as lifeless as ever. Walls, pots and pans, table, stove, and refrigerator, but that was all. Out of the corner of his eye, Bud saw movement. Not from inside the house, from next door at Myra O'Melia's house. She stood on her front porch and looked as though she'd bolt from her perch and come investigate him at any moment. Bud turned and carried the picayunes back into the house. As he did so, Bud felt the weight of being watched by Myra. He knew for sure if this had been the day before yesterday, he, in his old body, would have never made it back into the house without Myra catching him. He slipped inside, closed the door, and locked it. Bud leaned against the door and waited for the knock at any moment. He supposed every street in America had its own Myra O'Melia. They're the people who have a list of all the neighbors' phone numbers. They peek out from window blinds at any sound, and always call you needing something. They ring the doorbell if you don't answer your phone, and might even try to have a look-see into your garage, checking to see if your vehicle is there or if you're really gone. They might finagle their way around to scribble down license plate numbers on little scraps of paper to be filed away, or worse, they just might show up when you're entertaining company just to see who is over. Bud had seen and been the recipient of that old bird's actions more than three decades. Yes, I can say old bird, as I'm an old bird too, except for today, it would seem. The phone came alive for the first time in weeks. The sudden sound made Bud jump. If not for the regeneration of his heart, this might have been the end of him. The old bird had questions. He walked to his chair and sunk down into it. He let the phone ring four or five more times, and then he picked up the receiver. He hesitated for a moment. "Hello?" Bud said. "Myra, I was just thinking to myself, it's been a few weeks since you've called." He listened as she talked. "Oh, a young man here this morning? You don't say." "Well, of course I know he's here." Bud paused a moment. "I don't sound like myself." "Myra, if you need something from the store, I'm not going today." He put a hand on his forehead. "No, I'm not ill. I just don't need anything." She questioned him about the young man again. "Myra, I just don't see where it's your business who I have in my home." This little game was getting him nowhere, and she was babbling louder. "Have a good day, Myra." She was still talking when he hung up the phone. As he looked down at the two papers in his lap, none of the headlines therein captured his attention. Given his own life was in such sudden turmoil, he was ready to die. and had been for a long time. Bud had lived a full life and longed to see his loved ones and a lifetime of friends. He yearned to be with them. He'd never commit what he considered to be the greatest sin, because life was a gift from God. However, the word suicide lingered momentarily. His current state of being defied every natural law known to mankind. He paced the living room floor for a time. He didn't know when he had gotten out of his chair or how long he had paced the floor. What he did know for sure is that he was terrified by the possibilities of his circumstances. His heart was racing. He had to stop, had to force himself to calm down. He needed to concentrate and think of what he should do. What if he stayed this way? Oh God, he said, but felt trapped like never before in his life. There was literally no one for him to call for help. He couldn't even go to the grocery store to chat with the two people who made time for him. One thing was for sure, he wasn't about to go to any hospital and have them run endless tests on him. Bud felt sure they'd never stop. The house was filled with the aroma of coffee, which now made him feel sick. The clock ticked, refrigerator hummed, birds chirped outside the window. As he watched them, their demeanor suddenly changed. They chirped louder, swarmed the window, and clawed at the screen. He sensed they wanted him. They wanted to attack him, to rid the world of him. Bud wondered if other animals would act the same. He felt dizzy as he collapsed in his chair. "This can't be happening," he said. "I've lived my life. Just let it end." Bud repeated the words, "Just let it end." As if by merely speaking the words, death would come to him. It did not. He put his hands up, covering his face, and then removed them. His face felt wrong, oddly wrinkle-free and smooth, smoother and softer than it had been before. He was too terrified to look in the mirror again. As the clock ticked, he turned and looked at the grandfather clock. He felt sure its hands would be moving in reverse. Or had he just been dreaming that? The hands moved forward as they did before this whole thing started. Bud told himself if he took a nap, he'd wake up old and in his little world, or at least his world would be right again. But just then, an ugly, disastrous, evil notion took root in the uttermost part of his brain. "No, that would be impossible," Bud said. As crazy as the thought was, Bud forced himself to stay awake. No mid-afternoon nap today. In some aspects, he felt like a prisoner in his own home. He felt like he was being watched and imagined Myra O'Melia probing about the perimeter of his house. She was filling the hood of his car to see if it were warm, trying to pick the locks on the doors, and she was looking in the windows, hoping to find out what she could. Bud could see her gray hair enclosing her wrinkled face, which held her black, ever-inquisitive eyes. Lips that were thin and usually smeared with red lipstick, and where thousands of questions lingered. She wanted the secret to his source of vitality. But he didn't know what caused this, and he sure didn't want any part of it. Bud had to put an end to this and stop thinking about all this mess. He leaned back in his chair, reached over the side of the recliner, and pulled out a scrapbook. He placed it on his lap and opened it. The pages, yellow and old. The first two pictures were of his mother and father. The next page had been photos of Eve's parents. Good people, he said aloud. On another page, he found pictures of his siblings and himself. They were playing ball in the street. The memory of his first home run he'd hit made him proud. The smells of that late spring day seemed to return, and he breathed it in deeply as he turned another page. The photo of two teenagers leaning against a tree were Eve and himself. He was as skinny as a beanpole. Eve looked as stunning as ever. It was too hard to imagine how fast life goes by, but it does. Almost 3 years later, he stole his first kiss from her under that same tree. Lord, the courage he had to muster. Bud McCurdy imagined that kiss and a million more, the curve of her mouth, the warmth of her lips against his own. Oh, the sweet taste. He sighed, turning the page. Long ago friends littered the next few pages, and he found himself wishing for them all, if only for a moment, to hug, hear, talk, laugh with, and for a few to put things right. However, they were all gone. He alone remained. Somewhere along life's path, he'd stopped building new friendships. He moved on to wedding pictures, then at the sight of baby photos of Lily and Bud Jr., his hands trembled, chest tightened, and his mouth felt dry. Tears rolled down his face and dropped from his chin. It felt so wrong. They should be here. His old self had been a testament to years lived, both good and bad. That was replaced now. Anger, trepidation, and frustration seeped into his heart as the core of his being trembled. His eyes opened like floodgates as tears flowed uncontrollably. Why was this happening? Bud slumped back in his chair. His body and mind were physically and emotionally drained. His eyes heavy, the old chair soft, and he felt the familiar comforts of his home. He closed his eyes and slept took him into her arms. Coming to, Bud heard the pounding at the door. It grew in urgency. He struggled to open his eyes. When he did, it was too bright and hard to focus. There were voices, yet he could not make sense of what was being said, who it might be, or what they even wanted. He tried to lift himself off the chair, but found he could not support this notion. The clock still ticked, and the refrigerator hummed, yet both seemed louder. Maybe it was time to replace this old thing and get one that makes its own ice. The voices and pounding at the door drew his attention once more. His inability to get up or even speak caused him to panic as thoughts of a stroke crossed his mind. In the next instant, the door was kicked in and sounds of splitting wood that made him wince. Light from the outside blinded him. and he closed his eyes. Then he felt the hands lift and carry him out of the house. Bud saw his reflection in the storm door. Myra O'Melia stood at the sidewalk and looked at him in disbelief. "I'll swear? Whose baby is that?" she said. "And why is he wearing Bud McCurdy's clothes?" "No one in the house except for this little guy," the policeman said. With an outburst of tears and screams, Bud looked back at his home. Mail and newspapers littered his porch. In his heart, he knew this metamorphosis was complete, and in that truth, he faced a terrifying certainty. Life, his life, would be relived. Thus concludes The Passing by T. Mitchell Adams.